In going through the second chapter of the book of Revelation, analyzing the Kabbalistic and alchemical symbolism in this mystical book, which has been long debated by scholars and students of the Bible. And in Gnosis, we understand that to comprehend the meaning of this book, we have to go deeper than the mere words on the page. We have to understand the symbols. And we have to understand the hidden aspect or the secret knowledge which is indicated by the words that are present in this book. The book of Revelation is really a guide or encoded document, which is written for initiates, written for students or aspirants of the path towards the self-realization of the being. And by initiates, we mean those who are accomplishing the work. In particular, when we read the second chapter, and we're reading about the seven churches, of course, we've already discussed that these seven churches are magnetic centers, psychological magnetic centers, energetic centers, which reside within our physiology. And the activation and full functioning of these centers is only occurring in those who are actually working in the path. That is, people who have already passed through some form of internal initiation. And that's why they're called an initiate. Someone who is studying the path or considering entering into the path can study this book and try to grasp the meanings of this book. But its real application, its true direct usefulness, is really for those who are already making some steps, those who have already accomplished some degree of work. So we say that because the real comprehension of this book is really reserved for those who are working in the path of initiation. This means that we have to have patience, and we have to have a great deal of discipline in order to understand the real meanings of the text. They're very practical, they're very personal. So, having introduced the first few churches, we've now arrived at the heart, the church Thyatira. Thyatira is related with the heart, and in Sanskrit is related with the chakra anahata. Thyatira, of course, is the fourth of these seven churches. Being the fourth, we understand that it will have a relationship with the number four, but also when we look at the structure of the tree of life, and we count from the bottom sphere up, we arrive at the fourth, we're talking about Netzach, which is related with the mind, with the mental body. And we know that the third, or Hod, is related with the heart, or the astral body. When we study this church, Thyatira, we're really dealing with important qualities of the heart and mind. So when we begin to read this section of chapter 2 related with this church, we read that it says, "And unto the angel of the church in Thyatira, write." And we know that from previous lectures that this is indicating we have to work in practical steps. The deeper meaning of this sentence would be, "And unto the angel or atomic intelligent part of your being, of the cosmic forces congregated in the chakra anahata, or the intuitive center, which has the ability to perceive our being's spiritual insight in order to direct the activities of our life, which in your spinal medulla is the church and Thyatira, that is related with the cardiac plexus at the height of the heart, where, by means of initiation, all thoughts are fused by the divine fires of nous. Write or send through the nous the divine emanations of your inner God. So that little brief sentence that introduces this section contains a lot of knowledge. The angel of this church, of course, is an atomic aspect, or one part of our own inner being. There is a kind of intelligence with this, which is within us, related to each of these seven churches. And each of the seven are, of course, magnetic centers, or energetic centers, which have the capacity to transform energy in a particular way. But the use and activation of that church is only granted to those who earn that, who earn it, who've proven that they have the capacity to manage and handle those energies with wisdom, with prudence, and in accordance with the will of their own being. That is to say, no one can open a church or activate a chakra unless they deserve it, unless they've proven that they can be responsible. The activation of any magnetic center confers power and abilities onto that person. And of course, our own inner being, that divine wisdom, that intelligence, is not going to give it to a foolish child, to someone who's going to act foolishly. So, of course, this church, this chakra of Anahata, is directly related with intuition. Now, it seems that intuition is not well understood. To be intuitive, or to intuit something, is to know without reason, without reasoning. Is to know something without having been told. To know something without having a good argument or having logic. So many people say, well, I'm doing this because I feel it's right, because of this and that reason, because I have these things support my decision. Well, that may or may not be intuition. True intuition says it's right, and that's all. Intuition just knows. So in us, we have to look at how to distinguish between instinct, or those feelings that we have in our guts, in our instinctual center, versus intuition, which is more a quality of the heart. Real intuition comes to us in a very quiet voice, especially in the beginning. Intuition works in a very subtle way. And if our mind is agitated, we cannot hear it. If the mind is very identified, if we're facing a difficult situation, something that, like a big decision that we have to make, and our mind is very active, very agitated, we won't be able to hear the guidance of our intuition. It's important to understand this, because the best guide that we have to navigate life is intuition. Intuition is directly connected with the intelligence of our inner being. And it's through the heart, through the Adam Nous, that our being can directly give us pushes, impulses, guidance. But it won't come as a clanging bell, and it won't come as a loud trumpet, particularly in the beginning. It will come as a little nudge, a little sense, a little feeling, subtle, quiet. So we have to learn how to listen to that. We have to develop the ability to be present, to be watchful, and to listen. If we have a given problem, if we're facing some kind of difficulty, the best thing we can do is to not think about it. This is very difficult. To not think and to instead listen to the voice of the heart. To develop that requires discipline, patience, and a great deal of carefulness. It's easy to confuse instinct with intuition because they both seem to come from somewhere in our belly, somewhere in the solar plexus, somewhere in that region. And so we have a sense or a feeling, this is what I have to do. And to distinguish or discriminate between fear and intuition is not easy. Fear can also vibrate within us as a subtle impulse, as a subtle push to act in a particular way. So it requires an additional tool in order to discriminate between these voices. And of course, that's meditation. There's no better way to develop intuition than the practice of meditation. So in order to understand this church, this chakra, we have to understand that it is a center or an energetic center, a place of the processing of energy, which requires us to apply discipline and carefulness in order to activate it and use it. In order to receive the insight and the intuition that we can get from our being, we need to work with the chakra of the heart. Continuing in the book, we see that John wrote, "These things says the Son of God, who hath his eyes like unto a flame of fire, and his feet are like fine brass." The esoteric meaning, one level, is this: "These things says the Adam Nous, the Son of your inner God, who hath his eyes," or spiritual insight, "like unto a flame of Christic fire that penetrates everything. And his feet in the circulatory system are like a carrier of fine brass, a vessel, or a pure metallic feminine and masculine alloy attained by means of sexual alchemy." What this passage is expressing is that the chakra, Anahata, is enlivened by the fires of Christic energy, Christic fire. And that Christic fire is developed in the process of alchemy. By combining the masculine and feminine metals, those principles, but in purity, which of course is white tantrism. This is the combining of male and female without lust. The combining of these two forces in purity. Truly, this is the very foundation of the Book of Revelation. Is this understanding. When the chakra of the heart is being activated, it means that the initiate, the person who's working in the process of initiation, has already raised the serpent of the Kundalini up to the heart. And in order for that to happen, let's see, did I get this right? 1, 2, 3. In order for that to happen, that person has to be working in sexual alchemy with a spouse. The Kundalini can only be awakened and raised by a couple. All right, 1 second, we're having some technical issues. Let's see if this works better. If there's a problem, let me know. To awaken the Kundalini requires that a couple work together. A single person cannot awaken the Kundalini. So, to awaken the fires of the heart, to fully activate the church of Thyatira, requires that someone is working as a couple, in a marriage, in white tantrism. Those fires, of course, arise vertebra by vertebra, very slowly, up the spinal column, up 33 degrees, little by little. The entire process of awakening the Kundalini, from the very first moment to the last, is conducted according to the merits of the heart. Well before this church is even activated, the heart is involved. So even to have the advent of the fire, even to awaken that fire in the very beginning, requires moral purity, moral progress, qualities of the heart. So it's more so once we reach the activation of the heart center. To activate the heart center requires moral progress. But that progress, of course, is achieved by making changes in our behaviors, renouncing wrong behaviors and adopting good ones. And of course, the basis of that is chastity. That spiritual insight, intuition, is fed by that fire. As we transmute the sexual forces, as we conserve that energy, and as we face our ordeals, and as we renounce wrong behaviors and perform good ones, we're cultivating a flame, an energy, which is very real. It's not theoretical. And that energy is a source of fire, a source of light, a source of fuel. That fuel is what empowers and enlivens and activates the churches, the chakras. So as we work in this way, gathering this energy, little by little, we feed better, purer, and more potent energy to each of these churches. Which means that, in particular, when we open this church of the heart, little by little, the capacities of that church grow. And our intuition becomes clearer, becomes more comprehensible, becomes more prevalent. And this is a process. It's something that requires patience. But again, the basis of it is in sexual alchemy. So continuing with the book, we read, "I know thy works, and charity, and service, and faith, and thy patience." Obviously, this has a deeper meaning than the superficial, just the literal meaning. So going deeper, we see, "I, the solar logos," or the Christ, "that nourishes your thoughts with divine fiery emanations collected by your Adam nous through the cardiac plexus." The root of this energy, the sexual force, and that force as it's distributed through our organism, through the blood, through the breath, through the nervous systems, the root of that is the Christ. That energy is sacred. That energy has the capacity to transform us into something better than what we are now. That energy is managed, directed within us by certain intelligent forces. We know we have intelligence simply in the instinctive part of our physiology. The intelligence that manages all the physiological processes that are happening in us right now. But those forces are guided by a superior intelligence. And within the body, we know the Adam nous is directly concerned with the development of superior energies and forces within our organism. In particular, related with the blood and with the fire, with the energy that circulates in our nervous systems and the energy that feeds our spiritual development. The source of that force is the Christ itself. And the Adam nous is like the chariot driver, the charioteer, the one who's holding and controlling the direction of that energy. But that can only happen if we provide for it. If we waste our energy, then there's nothing the Adam News can do. If we don't give pure energy, if we don't transform energy in the right way in ourselves, then instead that energy becomes corrupted and it feeds the development of what we call the secret enemy, which is a diabolic intelligence which directs those energies into harmful behaviors and activities. So it's really up to our will from moment to moment. This is not just to decide, well, I'm going to do the right thing and I'm going to serve the Adam News in myself and try to come to know good things. That's fine. It's good to have that intention. But we have to perform it in action. And that action is from moment to moment within our mind, within our hearts. It's not enough to simply believe in it or want it. We have to do it. And this is not easy. That force, of course, is nourishing the heart, nourishing the blood. The book continues, I know thy works, or initiations, because here in the intuitive center or emotional superior center is where the sacred initiations that your innermost receives in the internal worlds are registered. As I mentioned, this chapter is really addressing people who have worked in initiation, because to have a church or chakra active requires the kundalini is awake and is being raised up the spine. And to reach this church of Thyatira requires that you at least have raised the serpent of the physical body, the first serpent of fire, up to the level of the heart, at the minimum. And of course, that's a big accomplishment. It's only the very, very beginning of the work, but it is a great accomplishment. Those initiations, for example, the initiation of the first serpent, are not received by us. Initiation is something that is bestowed upon our own inner being. We as terrestrial people do the work. We perform our part, which is to work on ourselves, to save our energies, to learn. But the actual initiation, when a given process is complete and we've satisfied the tests and ordeals related to it, the actual initiation, the gift, is not given to us. It's given to our being. It's given to that divinity which resides within. Our pride does not like that. Our pride wants to say, I have accomplished something. I have received a certain initiation. Or I have raised the kundalini a certain amount. Or I, even to the point of, I have awakened the kundalini. We feel very proud of that. And we want to show everyone. We want to tell everyone, maybe in a subtle way, but we want to broadcast it because of pride. This is the quickest way to lose initiations. The quickest way to corrupt yourself is to talk about it. To broadcast it. Initiations should never be spoken of. This is something that is very intimate, very personal, very sacred. Moreover, it has nothing to do with you. Initiations have to do with the being. The being receives them for his glory, not for ours. We do our work to glorify our being. We perform our processes of transmutation, meditation, work on ourselves, sacrifice. We do all of that, firstly, of course, to take ourselves out of suffering, because we're tired of suffering. But the benefits that come from those works have to be dedicated to our being. If the ego takes credit, then we're walking in two directions at the same time. And you can't do that. You can't serve two masters. If your ego is taking credit for your works, for your meditation, for your sacrifice, for your initiations, you're walking the wrong direction. So these initiations, of course, are directly related with our emotional center, with the qualities of the heart. Because again, everything in initiation is based upon the merits of the heart. The book continues, and charity and service and faith and thy patience. Charity, service, and faith, and patience. Of course, these are the virtues that we cultivate, that we activate, that we enliven when this church of Thyatira is awakened. So we cannot assume then that if we work in the processes of initiation and we awaken this church or chakra, that these qualities or virtues will just be bestowed upon us. It doesn't work like that. Virtues are crafted. Not in the sense that we make them. The being does. The being makes virtues in us the same way that a blacksmith crafts metal. The blacksmith applies heat and pressure to the raw elements. And that's what the being does with us. If we suffer, if we have ordeals, if we have difficulties, we have to thank God. Of course, we don't want to do that. We want life to be easy. And we tend to think we deserve for life to be easy. And we think that since we're doing this Gnostic work, that we deserve gifts and virtues and powers to be bestowed upon us. Yet when we face difficulty, we complain. When we face problems, we whine. When we receive criticism, we retaliate. When we're blamed, we proclaim our innocence. All of these demonstrate we do not comprehend the nature of this work. The process of gnosis is the creation of what's called Vajrasattva in Sanskrit. Vajrasattva is the diamond soul. Vajra is a Sanskrit word which means thunderbolt or diamond. And sattva is, of course, the essence of or the embodiment of. So a Vajrasattva is a diamond soul, a perfected soul. To become that requires that all impurities are removed. And for impurities to be removed, you have to apply heat and pressure. It's this way in nature on all levels. For the blacksmith to create a beautiful ornament, for the metal worker to craft a perfect jewel, to craft a perfect piece of jewelry, they have to apply heat and pressure to those metals in order to extract the impurities. And the same is true of our psyche. Yet in this case, the one who is applying the heat and pressure is our own being. The fire itself is Christic. We, as the raw matter, are subjected to fire and pressure in order for all our impurities to come out. And our job is to observe that, to withstand it and not react, to observe it in order to comprehend, and to separate ourselves from those impurities. The problem is we believe that we are the impurities. We believe we are our pride. So when we're criticized, or when we think someone's betraying us, We feel pain. Where do we feel that? In the heart. When someone is attacking us, saying things against us, and we feel pain, we feel anger. Where do we feel that? In the heart. So this church requires to activate this church and to fully work with the virtues and powers of this church requires that we learn how to manage negative emotion, to develop the capacities of charity, service, faith, and patience. These are not just bestowed upon us like God descending from heaven to give us a gift. These are earned. To develop charity and service requires that we have humility. To be a charitable person and to be of service to other ones means that you need to be reducing your pride. Because someone who's proud will only serve others in order to serve himself. Like the publican and the Pharisee in the Bible. This type of person will proclaim their service to others. Oh yes, I've donated this much money. And I go and I serve in the homeless shelters. And I go and I feed the poor. And I do this and I do that. This is pride. And this undermines the development of real charity and real service. Faith. To develop faith requires works. It requires experience. Of course, in Gnosis we know faith has nothing to do with belief. Faith is based in experience, which means that when we have faith, we've experienced it. We know. The virtue of faith is arrived at precisely through experience. But real experience and gnosis can only come when we have sincerity. When we approach gnosis with greed, with pride, or with envy, we're not being sincere. We want experiences to feed our pride. Or we want experiences because someone else has had them, and we want that too. Or we want to have experiences because we have a craving for sensations. We think samadhi is a great ecstatic experience that must be a fantastic type of sensation that we want to experience. This is gluttony and greed. And so long as we vibrate with that quality, we cannot develop real faith. The processes related to the chakra anahata, the church Thyatira, of course, is going to encompass ordeals, challenges, tests, difficulties. As the being is applying heat and pressure to us, great amount of heat through the process of ordeals, problems, difficulties. Things that seem insurmountable in life, a great deal of suffering, and pressure as the mallet of the blacksmith strikes against us again and again. If we respond to that with humility, with patience, with meditation, we can separate ourselves from those impurities, and little by little these qualities become revealed in us in the same way that the beautiful metal is revealed as the impurities flow out of it. So what I'm saying is we don't create these virtues. The being reveals them in us. We don't own these virtues. They are the being himself. To say I am humble is a lie. The being is humble. The being has humility. And that light may shine in us if our ego is out of the way. But we as terrestrial people do not have virtues. We have the ego, and if we work, we can have the being. We are just a vessel. We're a vessel within which a light can shine if we clean the glass. the book continues, and thy works, and the last to be more profound, or to be more than the first. Of course, coming right after these virtues of charity, service, faith, and patience, we know that to say, and thy works, of course, is related to meditation. The only way we can understand ourselves and understand our lives and understand the challenges we face is to meditate. The intellect cannot grasp it. The intellect cannot penetrate all the workings of karma and all the workings of the complexities that surround us. In particular, the intellect can never comprehend the being. So to work in this process of opening this church, we cannot rely on the intellect. In fact, the intellect can poison it. We have to rely on superior emotion, superior intellect. And these aspects of our psychology are worked with through meditation. And thy works of meditation and the last level of comprehension to be more profound than the first are intellectual. And the last to be more than the first. Obviously, the first aspect of our psychology that we apply to anything is our intellect. It's the most present in most of us. We have to go deeper than that. We can only go deeper to have deeper comprehension and deeper understanding when we learn how to meditate. So the book continues, "Notwithstanding, I have a few things against you, because you suffer that woman Jezebel, which calls herself a prophetess, to teach and to seduce my servants to commit fornication and to eat impure things sacrificed unto idols." The esoteric meaning is, "Notwithstanding, I have a few things against your discernment, because you suffer that woman or protoplasmatic lunar mind, Jezebel." Jezebel means self-centered, egotistical, or vain. The animal psyche, the animal mind that we have within. Now here we see how these numbers 3 and 4 are related here. We've talked about how this church, Thyatira, or Anahata, is related with the heart, Hod. The sphere of Hod. But it's also related with the mind, the sphere of Netzah, the fourth sphere of the Kabbalah. It's related with the mind here in this book we see because we're talking about Jezebel. And Jezebel is our animal mind, the lunar mind. In other words, our ego. It's all of the animal elements that we have in our psyche. And that process through our intellect, through our inferior emotions, and through our bestial instincts and animal passions. Which, by means of fanaticism, sophism, politics, journalism, diplomacy, and materialistic science, etc., calls herself a prophetess. The animal mind is very much in love with itself. And this animal mind is that intelligence, diabolic intelligence, which is feeding our politics, our newspapers, our magazines, our television shows, our movies, our music. And we worship that. We ingest that food on a daily basis, hungrily. This is what it means to eat impure things. To consume the food of Jezebel, or to consume her teachings, is to take all of these impure ideas, impure theories, impure concepts, impure images from the materialistic science, from atheism, from our culture which worships fornication, worships crime, worships gossip and envy, vanity. She calls herself a prophetess because the animal mind believes that it knows. The animal mind, our own ego, believes that it knows the best things to do. It knows what's right. It knows what to do. It knows how to behave. This is why when we encounter gnosis, we're shocked. Because our animal mind believes that it already knows the right things to do and say and believe. This is Jezebel in us. But that same force is active in our environment. There are many people who enthrone their own Jezebel or their animal mind, and they teach gnosis, or they teach religion, they teach spirituality. But they teach it in an impure way, mixed with pride, with envy, with lust. So that's why it says, to teach and seduce my servants to commit fornication. The servants are, of course, Gnostic initiates, or just initiates, anyone who's working, truly working with the forces of the Kundalini. Jezebel is present everywhere, trying to convince the initiates to mix their teachings with the teachings of Jezebel. What does that mean? There are many who want to mix the sacred doctrine, the doctrine of the Christ, with impure doctrines. For example, channelers, mediums. These are people who open themselves up to spirits, who come and teach and give oracles and give prophecies. But who are these spirits? Well, they call themselves Jesus or Saint Germain or Cagliostro or Moses. But anyone can call themselves whatever they want. These spirits teach a little bit of the truth and a little bit of a lie. They mix the sacred doctrine with impure things. And so they corrupt the minds of the student. In the same way, we have teachers and students of the sacred doctrine who mix that teaching with modern psychology. Modern psychology, materialistic psychology, is an invention of people who are stumbling in the dark. It has some helpful things, but it has a lot that is harmful. And when we mix that teaching with gnosis, we're blending elements that are not compatible, and the result is poison. When we take teachings that mix elements of impure doctrines, gray or black tantrism, when we take teachings that are related to channeled material, teachings of black magic, teachings that involve any efforts to manipulate the will of another person, then we're mixing impure things. We're corrupting the doctrine. The problem occurs because the student relies on the intellect. Real gnosis, the true doctrine, the sacred doctrine, is not in any book. Truth cannot be communicated. It has to be experienced. The mistake that the student can make very easily is to make the assumption that the book is the truth. It is not. The book is a signpost. The truth has to be experienced, and this has to do with the heart, not the intellect. So the student, hungry for experience, for direct knowledge, studies, tries to understand with the intellect, but does not activate the heart. That person will remain hungry and seek food to feed the mind because they've not activated the heart. What this means is that a student may come to Gnosis and read the books, study the books, become very impressed. But if they're not working in the right way, if they're not meditating in the right way, if they're not activating their heart, if they're not listening to their intuition, but feeding the mind, feeding the mind, feeding the mind, they'll become tired. That craving will not be satisfied. The craving of Jezebel. And so they will start to search in other books. Maybe reading books of witchcraft, reading books of psychology, reading books of other religions. And they'll start to mix because they're not having the experience in themselves, in their heart. And the mind is hungry. Jezebel wants to eat, wants to feed. So they start searching elsewhere and they become diverted. And they do this believing that since Gnosis is the doctrine of the synthesis, they should be able to find it anywhere. This is a subtle mistake. It's unfortunate. And it shows that the student really should develop their heart. Those are the fires of the cosmic Christ which enliven our intuition and open the doors for us to begin to receive the direct guidance of the being. That does not require that we have the Kundalini awake. Certainly it's stronger. But to open the heart can begin immediately. The difficulty is we tend to overdevelop the intellect. And what we need to learn is to balance the heart and the mind. There's in the Egyptian mysticism, we always see the image of Anubis with the scale. And this has different meanings. Of course, it's measuring good versus bad, dharma versus karma. But it also is a measurement of the heart versus the mind. On one scale, we see a jar. And the jar is a symbol of the heart. And the other scale, we see a feather. And the feather, of course, related to the air, is related to the mind. So for the initiate to work properly in the path, we have to have equilibrium, which is the balance of the heart and the mind, where these two work together. We need to study. We need the intellect. But in the West, in particular, the heart is dead. We have to open the heart. We have to balance them. Opening the heart is not an idea. It's not just a nice thing to talk about. It's something that has to be felt. It's qualities of emotion, which many Westerners have lost the capacity to feel. The heart is opened through meditation. It's opened through transmutation. It's especially helped with vocalizing, especially the mantra O. To extend that vowel of O directly impacts the heart, causes it to vibrate. This is an excellent practice. Spend a certain amount of time every day concentrating in the heart, visualizing a light glowing in the heart, a fire warming the heart, and vocalize aloud the sound O. This is a very strong food you can give to your heart. Of course, if you're listening to really loud music, you're doing the opposite. For example, the people nowadays who have very loud speakers in their homes or in their cars, that vibration is damaging the heart, destroying the emotional center. With the rap music and metal music and other things like that, that vibration is extremely damaging to the emotional quality of that person. And this is how we see many people who listen to that music become very cold emotionally, even cruel, very angry, very mean. It's because their heart has been damaged. listening to good music, sacred music. This opens the heart. It awakens the heart, feeds it. The heart, the qualities of the heart are subtle. There are great strong feelings. We have to develop the capacity to feel the subtle ones. Little differences, little changes. And this has to be done in balance with the intellect. Many students are attracted to gnosis or to spirituality because they want to have an understanding of things that are beyond the physical world. Perhaps we've had a dream where we knew we were dreaming, or we had an experience where we are awake out of the body, or we had some experience in meditation. All of these experiences are fueled by the energies of the heart. The capacity to be awake in the astral plane is based upon emotional energy. And if we're wasting our energy during the day in pride, in fear, in envy, we'll have no energy to have those experiences at night. If we're identified all day long with our anxiety, with our fear, with gossip, with resentment, then we cannot have our intuition working properly because we're wasting our energy. Moreover, if we're identified with the intellect, analyzing, theorizing, reading too much, having useless conversations, trying to conceptualize very complex theories, we're wasting energies. We're stealing energies from the heart to feed the mind. The intellect is overdeveloped at the expense of the heart. And the intellect in us is already far overdeveloped. The one who achieves the capacity to travel in the astral plane, to have comprehension and meditation, to have the powers of the heart awake, is one who has opened powers of the heart by balancing it with the intellect. The heart center can be awakened again by listening to the music of the great masters, by meditation, by becoming more mystical. In one of the Upanishads, which are the commentaries on the Vedas, it says, "Put away scholarship and be like a child." And of course, this reminds us of the words Jesus. And he says we have to become like children to enter the kingdom of heaven. This is the innocence of the mind. It is not to be naive like a child or inexperienced like a child. It is to have the quality of mind of a child. To have a mind that is open and at rest. That is not fascinated with foolishness, with theories. Not worried about transient things. So this book continues, "And I, the cosmic Christ, Vishnu Avalokiteshvara Kuan Yin, gave her, Jezebel, through the doctrine of my avatars, angels or messengers, space to repent of her animal behavior by transforming her nature into a superior one and thus finishing with her fornication. And she, persistently, throughout many returns, repented not." The cosmic Christ, out of compassion, gives us the opportunity to repent of our mistakes. But of course, humanity, being very identified with desire, with material things, with lust, chooses to follow the teachings of Jezebel, or the animal mind. And of course, does not repent of its mistakes. The cosmic Christ gives us the opportunity to change. And this is clear in the Gospels, when Jesus is saying that we have to become perfect, like our Father in heaven, and that adulterers and murderers and fornicators cannot enter into heaven. He never says that there's an easy ticket. He says we have to become perfect. This means we have to change. We have to stop being what we are. And the book of Revelation continues and says, "Behold, I will cast this protoplasmatic mind, Jezebel, her animal elements, into a bed or a cultivated, planted abyss of corruption, which she waters with her own corrupted, lustful, adulterous, sexual foulness. And them, all those animal and human elements that commit adultery with her in the mind through reasoning, into great tribulation or karmic debt, except if by meditation they comprehend and annihilate their creations from hell or egos, and thus they liberate the particles of God trapped within them, meaning except they repent of their inhuman deeds." We suffer right now. Some of us suffer intensely. We have to look at the cause of suffering. The cause of suffering is our own mind. What suffers in us is the mind itself. The mind suffers because it contains karmic elements or impurities, which vibrate in such a way that we suffer. We are trapped. We as a consciousness are trapped within that suffering. That is, these particles of the being, sparks of consciousness, are trapped within the ego. And so that consciousness suffers. We suffer. In order to transcend suffering, to escape suffering, we have to extract the consciousness from those impurities. Right now is our opportunity. Life itself is the opportunity to change. Out of compassion, the cosmic Christ is applying karma to humanity. That is the heat and pressure of the blacksmith who's sinking those impure elements into the heat of the forge, which is the application of karma. If we resist, if we complain, if we continue with bad behaviors, we have to sink deeper into that forge, that pit. But here's the difference. If we continue with our behaviors as we are, we will continue to sink within that pit, the abyss, the klipot, until all the impurities are removed from us. But this will take a long time, and it's very painful. In these moments, we have the opportunity to accelerate the process by conscious will, to choose to change, to demonstrate the willingness to take on the purification of our own selves. If we do that, we receive help. A lot of help. That work is very difficult, but it's a lot easier than sinking deeper into the abyss, into suffering. The work is painful, but it's a lot less painful than being recycled through the klipoth, through hell. But to do the work, to work on oneself, to actually accomplish it, not just to think about it, not just to believe in it, but to actually do it, requires the powers of the heart. The intellect cannot do it. You cannot build a beautiful temple, a beautiful city, with one screwdriver. The intellect is a screwdriver. It's a tool. That's it. To build the celestial Jerusalem of the soul, requires a great deal more than just the intellect. As long as we remain attached to our pride, to our envy, our resentment against others, our selfishness, we remain victim of karmic cycles, karmic recurrences, and we remain submerged in suffering. So the book continues, and by means of the second death, I will kill her children, or the products of the animal mind. Of course, the second death is the completion of that recycling process through the depths of hell. To reach the stage of the second death requires, could be thousands of years of suffering, intense suffering. The actual moment of the second death is when all of the ego is purified out of the consciousness of the person. And what remains is that essence, that spark of the soul, that embryo. Unfortunately, the one who passes through those many, many years of suffering in the submerged worlds and comes out the other end through the process of the second death, they've gained nothing. They have nothing to show for it. They've simply suffered for a very long time. And they come out of that process as the same as they started millions of years before. A simple spark which does not know itself. And I will kill her children of the animal mind, meaning all of the intellectual animals who dwell on this planet Earth, atheists that make business with the products of the earth, and hypocritical Pharisees that make business with the souls of men. And I will kill her children with death. The cosmic Christ is the great architect, the one who has put in place the laws and processes of nature for the great purpose of helping souls develop themselves in order to return into the absolute as perfect beings. Even though it may be hard to comprehend, hell itself is a part of that structure. And it exists out of compassion to give those souls and sparks a chance to try again. But they can only try again once they're purified of their karma, purified of their wrong actions. As long as we are identified with the animal mind, with the sensations that we get when we make a good sale, the sensations that we get when we make money, the sensations that we get when we buy some new product that makes us so happy. Those sensations are what keep us attached to the ego, to pride, to materialism. And those egos are what keep us cycling through degeneration, trapped in suffering. What's worse are those that make business with the souls of men, that make religion and spirituality into a business, into a money-making venture. This is a blasphemous crime. But of course, it's very common now. The teachings of the Christ are given freely out of compassion by the Christ itself. The wisdom, the knowledge, the understanding for any soul to accomplish its very purpose, that wisdom should be free. That wisdom should be made available without restriction. The very well-being of the soul of a man depends upon it. And to restrict him from accessing it because he cannot give you money is a gross example of the teachings of Jezebel, the animal mind. In particular, to say that to receive these teachings, we have to pay not only hundreds, but thousands, and in some cases, tens of thousands of dollars to receive help is absurd. Jesus did not charge money. He gave freely out of compassion. Buddha did not charge money. Neither did Krishna, nor Muhammad, nor Quetzalcoatl, nor Padmasambhava, nor any of the great masters who taught the true teachings. Not one charged a cent. They gave freely of themselves, sacrificing their own well-being, giving everything they had in order to help others, without any restriction whatsoever. The student is well advised to bear that in mind as a measure of a true teaching. A teaching that's charging is a teaching that has a weak foundation. A teaching that requires money is a teaching that has questionable. The qualities of the heart, charity and service. True charity, true service is given freely. And all the churches or magnetic plexuses of the spinal medulla shall know that I am He, the Christ, the breath of life in the blood, which through the circulatory system searches the reins, or in other words, the renal glands, the chakras of the kidneys, the suprarenal glands, the seat of carnal affection and passion, and hearts where the Adam noose or the coachman sits. The Christ, of course, is that life, that force, that energy, which enlivens every atom that exists. But in particular, that force and energy is active in our blood, which courses through the heart. And that process of the blood coursing through the heart is guided by the Adam noose, who's receiving those Christic forces and energies from above, combining them with the sexual forces that we transmute, circulating them through our energetic system. The Adam noose is that coachman who controls the reins, the suprarenal glands related to the kidneys. And of course, the kidneys, as purifying aspect of our physiology, are closely related with the forces of our sexual energy. The clairvoyant who observes the kidneys can see the quality of the sexual energy of a person. If the kidneys radiate a bloody red color, then that person is obviously very lustful. But if the kidneys radiate a pure white, beautiful light, and that person is chaste. The book continues, but unto you Gnostics I say, and unto the rest of the people who sublimate their sexual energies to the heart in Thyatira, and as many as have not this doctrine of Jezebel, which have not failed in the known temptations of Daat and the fiery, passionate animal depths of Satan, as they speak the mantras Iao, I will put upon you no other karmic burden. This is basically a statement saying that for those who perform their work transmutation, who reject the doctrines of Jezebel, who do not fail in their temptations related to their use of their energies, I will relieve their burden. That is, that the Christ will intervene in relation to our karma. This is the help that we receive. The karmic debt that we each have is really unimaginable. If you consider how many lifetimes that we've been processing through nature, and each of those lifetimes is a long period of accumulating actions, the consequences of actions, this is a lot to answer for. But that fiery, that chaste fire which ye have already in your heart, hold fast till I come. The Christ will incarnate in the person who passes through the Venustic initiation, which of course is after the fifth initiation of fire. This statement is saying that we need to hold on to the fires of the heart, to be patient, listen to intuition, transform inferior emotions into superior ones until he arrives within. And he that overcomes his animal fiery passions through all his solar initiations and keeps my chaste works unto the end, or the annihilation of his animal nature, to him will I give power over the elementals that control the four elements, air, fire, water, and earth, that dominate the inferior nature of the entire populace of the nations of the earth. And under the dominion, wealth, and glory of his innermost, he shall rule them, the elements of nature, with a rod, which of course symbolizes the spinal medulla, the spinal column, of iron, which is willpower. And as the vessels of a potter, they shall they, the inferior elemental forces of nature, be broken to shivers, even as I received the power of my inner father. So the initiate who holds the energies and manages the energies of the heart and the energies of the sexual force in purity is assisted by the Christ and uses that energy to annihilate the impure aspects of the mind, to begin to reduce Jezebel. And in that process is retrieving aspects of consciousness back. And that combination, killing the impure elements, returning or receiving back the pure ones, is giving that initiate power. Those fires of the heart, those forces that circulate in the blood and in the breath, are giving that initiate powers to control the elements. Firstly, within. As we face the ordeals in life, all the ordeals are processed in accordance with those four elements. Ordeals of water, air, earth, and fire. And of course, related to the heart, we're dealing with processes of air. Related to the mind, to Jezebel. Gaining control over the animal mind, in turn gives power over those elements. And that power is rooted in the spinal column, the rod of iron, willpower. And that will is will that is expressed over or dominating the animal elements that we have within. And how is that will developed? Through transmutation, through listening to the intuition that arises in the heart. We have the will to transmute, the will to change. But that will has to be guided. It has to be guided through the intervention of the being. And we know that will when we listen to our intuition. And I will give him through the resurrection in the fire and in the light, the morning star, the Venustic initiation. This is the announcement of the birth of the Christ in the heart of the Bodhisattva. He that hath an ear, let him hear what the Spirit says. This is, he that has awakened the chakra Vishuddha, the spiritual ear, let him hear what the Ruach Elohim, or the Spirit, says unto the churches. That is the wisdom that we receive from within. The awakening of the heart, the opening of the heart, is something that is accomplished in degrees. It's something that has to be arrived at with patience. It cannot be forced. The initiate who wants to accomplish these works has to act with prudence. That is to say, we need to work in balance every day. in a given day, we should work with all three brains. We should have a little time where we have some physical activity. We should have some time where we have emotional activity. And we should have some time working with the intellect. Working in that way, we learn how to balance and have equilibrium in the three brains. And we may quickly find that there are certain aspects of our development that we have been ignoring. And I would hazard a guess that most people will find that they completely ignore the development of the heart. That they spend all their time in physical activity or intellectual activity, but no time at all developing the heart. A good exercise, a good practical thing, a very enjoyable thing to do to open the heart is to listen to beautiful music. But that is not to say to put on classical music and then go and read, or to put on a nice symphony and then go and clean the house. What I mean by listening to music is to sit down and close your eyes and listen with your heart. To listen to each moment of that music. Not anticipating what will come, not analyzing the structure of the music, not trying to figure out what key it's in, not trying to figure out what instruments are playing, but listening to the emotional qualities that are being transmitted through those sounds. Even better, go and see a symphony. Go and see an opera. Because the musical instruments produce a vibration which is very powerful and has a strong influence on the awakening of the heart. Any questions? Yes. Okay. Yeah, the question is about mediumship and spiritualism. Can we say the same thing about seances? Of course, it's the same thing. A seance is just a group of people inviting in spirits that they don't know or see. It's like opening your doors to have anyone on the street come in. Opening the doors saying, hey, anybody wants to come in and talk? But you live in a bad neighborhood. A really bad neighborhood. Any other questions?
Besides the initiates Beethoven, Wagner, and Mozart, which other composers should we listen to whose music is good for the heart?
Oh, there's hundreds. Franz Liszt, Chopin, Brahms. There's literally hundreds. Verdi, Bach, Haydn, the list goes on. Vivaldi, so many. All the great classical composers, not the 20th century ones, but previous to that.
What about really loud classical music? Will that ruin the heart because it is really loud?
You can feel it. If it's loud but beautiful and good music, it's good for you. It's helpful. But if it's hurting your ears, yeah, you should turn it down. But you need to put it in a balanced way. Having it loud so you can hear it and feel it is fine.
I think it's in accordance with the taste of
Yeah, it's really your taste, how you like to hear it. But of course, you don't want to have it so loud that you're rattling the walls.
How is it that people, although asleep, can sometimes sense anger, frustration, or hatred in others? Does this have something to do with the senses of the heart?
Well, we have to understand that the consciousness itself is the capacity to perceive. So to sense someone else's anger is no great feat. You know, we sense that because we have it too. We vibrate in that way. To perceive anything is possible for any of us, right? So just because someone senses anger does not mean that their heart is awakened. What I'm trying to point at is that the consciousness perceives, whether it's free of the ego or trapped in the ego. When you sense that someone is angry, you sense that, but that does not mean that you're awake. It doesn't mean that your consciousness is free. To perceive that free of ego is another thing. To perceive someone else's feelings or anger, or, you know, to see their thoughts, this is another thing. The powers of the heart really are related to intuition. They're really related to sensing things that are not necessarily visible and are not necessarily perceivable by, let's say, instinct, which instinct can also sense fear in other people or anger in other people. You know, we instinctually feel with our lust. You can be facing one direction and sense there's something lustful to see behind you and turn all the way around to see it. Your intellect didn't know. Your five senses didn't know. But your animal instincts did. That doesn't have anything to do with the heart. But to sense something with the heart is, for example, to know something without having any reason, even without any visible perception of it, and to know it in a subtle way, in a quiet way. For example, I had a person who recently said to me, "Did you send a letter to this other person?" And I was astonished because I had never mentioned anything, never said anything about it. But my friend knew, just had a feeling. And according to my perception, that was something that was intuitive. So the point is that we have different ways of perceiving through different parts of our psyche. Some are infernal and some are superior. And learning to discriminate them requires experience. Another question?
Yeah. What is the difference between the intuition of the heart and the intuition of the Manipura chakra spoken of in the last lecture?
It's the same thing. Intuition is a quality of the being. Really, intuition is a sense of knowing. It's a way of understanding something. And it's rooted in the heart, but it's also received through the telepathic center in the Manipura chakra. It's also something that's related to the intellect, to the mind. So it's not something that's limited simply to the heart. It's a power of the being, which utilizes a lot of different aspects of our psychology and physiology. So, another question?
Since the being is the one who has the virtues, what qualities can the essence itself develop? Is it just either asleep or awake?
The essence is part of the being. So the essence is sort of like the vessel through which the light of the being expresses. So, you know, the essence itself is really the means by which the virtues of the being are manifested. That's all. The essence itself, we are asleep, right? So we need to awaken. We need to activate the essence. We need to bring it to the front in us and make it work. And when we do that, those qualities of the being will shine. But it doesn't mean that we are that. Anything else? No? Good.
So all the chakras are really related with each other.
Right. The comment was made that all the chakras are related with each other, and this is true. When you talk about one, they always relate to the other ones. And that's why, you know, in each chapter of, or each little section here, we always hear, "He that hath an ear, let him hear." Yeah, we may be talking about, you know, the first few chakras in the process, but they're all related. They're all interrelated. They're all transformers of energy in our psyche that work together. It's just that we activate them and open them one by one as the Kundalini awakens. That doesn't mean that they're not functioning to some degree, even when the Kundalini has not reached that level. For example, a single person who's not awakening the Kundalini can still work with the chakras, can still do the vocalization, can still feed them, and have sparks become active in them. It's not the same thing as having the kundalini active, where that center is filled with fire, becomes fully active. But a single person can put some energy there and have sparks there, so they will have intuition. They will have other capacities. You know, and there are yogis and practitioners who worked as a single person who did that. And so they worked with the chakras to a certain degree. But it's not the same as someone who's awakened one or more serpents of fire. And even beyond that, the serpents of light. So there are degrees, many degrees of work. Yes?
Could we say that information or packets of information being received through intuition is info being transmitted to us by the being? Or do other beings use that as well, high beings?
Intuition is how your being communicates with you. You understand what's right and wrong, what you need to do, because your own being is communicating through that means in your heart, in your mind, through the consciousness. You can sense help from other beings, from other masters, from whatever forces may be trying to assist you, also through intuition. But that arrives because your being allows it.
Your being transforms us with that information.
Precisely. The being is the one who takes that information and gives it to you. That is to say, you as an essence are part of your being. Everything you have and are, in the positive sense, is because of him. If you receive help, if you receive guidance from any other source, it is because he allows you to receive it. Period. And of course, on the opposite side, anything that is bad and harmful and wrong is your fault. It's Jezebel. It has nothing to do with the being. Now we have to clarify that by saying, you have to be very careful about how you interrelate, how you transform impressions, how you receive assistance. You have to always, always, always rely on your being first. Always. You may have an experience with a certain master, a certain angel, a certain entity. You may even have people come to you physically and say this and that to you. That's all fine. It's good to receive help. We need help. But always rely on your being first. If you receive help, confirm it. Act on it when your being has proven it to you, has proven its value. It's very easy for us to be deceived. There are many people who may act humble, who may appear to be very good instructors or very good people or even great masters. They are not your being. Your being is the only one who knows what you need. And if you act on other people's advice, other people's help, it's very easy to fall into mistakes.